Hello everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this very special podcast, we will be looking at news from the week up to the 14th of October. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
We usually have news from the Institute at the end of the podcast, but perhaps you'd actually like to tell us why this is a special podcast, Kate.
I certainly would, Rod. Today, I'm so pleased to announce that we won an award from Association Excellence for this podcast. We came first in the category. And it's a thank you not only to those of you who listen, download, but also for your discernment that you're enjoying this podcast. And obviously, that's being talked about. So thank you all very much. And of course, thank you to the rest of the team who helped this podcast happen.
Thank you, Kate. Our first story asks, should job seekers have to play down health conditions? This concerns a row that erupted on the 8th of October over a Job Centre Plus leaflet that encouraged job seekers to play down physical and mental health problems in their applications. The advice appears under the banner heading, what words will you use to describe your condition, and advises job seekers to avoid words that sound worse than they are, such as chronic and degenerating, and avoid terms such as depression, ME, or low back pain, and use more general terms. Speaking to The Guardian, Mind Senior Policy Officer Ayaz Manji said, anyone who discloses a mental health problem at work deserves to be treated with respect, and job centres should not be reinforcing stigma by advising people not to disclose. People with mental health problems have just as much to offer as anyone else in the workplace, and it's right that this is being challenged. Kate, following the media furore over the leaflet, the DWP announced that the material had been withdrawn. But what sort of risks could the type of messaging it contained pose to job seekers who are struggling with health problems?
It really illustrates, doesn't it, the fine line between disclosure and putting a best face, a positive spin. I think we all go to job interviews and want to look our absolute best. So you can almost understand that the thinking behind this advice was in the right place. We have a very strength-based approach to personal development, as we talked about in previous weeks. So you don't want to go to an employer and say, I'm a problem waiting to happen. You want to put yourself forward as a real asset. And I think that's the point that they're trying to emphasise here, that people with mental health conditions have just as much to offer in the workplace as those who don't have a recognised condition. So it's about bringing your best self to your job interview, not lying, but just looking for all the positives.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story considers encouraging findings that have emerged from a Credit Suisse study of how gender diversity has developed across 3,100 firms around the world over the past 3 years. Entitled the CS Gender 3000 in 2019, The Changing Face of Companies, the report points out companies with at least 5% of women on boards have an average of 18% women in management. This proportion increases as the percentage of women on boards rises in all 3 years under analysis, suggesting that the impact of greater diversity in the boardroom leads to a better gender balance in executive functions. At the 50% level of board representation, we find nearly 30% of women in management. On the specific point of performance, the report is also very positive, stating, our analysis continues to reflect, by way of the correlation observed, a performance premium among the more gender diverse companies relative to those that are less diverse. This was particularly clear when the researchers focused purely on family firms, as we see that over the past 5 years, family-owned companies with at least one female executive have outperformed male-only family-owned companies in every year. Richard Caresley, head of the investment bank's global thematic research team, added, we do not assert cause and effect in our research, but let the data speak. We find a material correlation between gender diversity and corporate performance. Kate, what should businesses learn from these findings, and is Credit Suisse right to stop short of asserting cause and effect?
It's interesting, isn't it, that we're presented with evidence, more evidence for something we know already about better performance from more diverse senior teams, about the strong business case, about how important role models are, and unless there are senior females in organisations, people lower down aren't able to aspire to those positions or less able to. So yet again, we've been presented with more evidence. I think Richard Kersley is being cautious here, saying, well, this it speaks for itself. Please do not make me say again what we've seemed to have known for such a long time. It's heartening to see this, especially with such a reputable and strong brand there as Credit Suisse putting their name to it. And long may it continue, because it's still interesting that we're complimenting ourselves or these companies on 30% representation.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story begins by asking us to try and imagine what 400,000 tons of new plastic looks like. A recent Korn Ferry article says that this is roughly the weight of 40 Eiffel Towers, and it is also the amount of new plastic Unilever wants to stop using each year. Recently, Unilever announced its plans to slash its annual use of new plastic by half, or nearly 400,000 tons per year over the next 5 years. The consumer goods giant used around 772,000 tons of new plastic in 2018, but aims to cut that down to no more than 386,000 tons per year by 2025, by using more recycled plastic and offering more unwrapped goods. Clothing brands like the North Face and Adidas have also started using recycled plastics in an effort to limit ocean waste. And Ron Malachuk, a member of Korn Ferry's Global Industrial Market and Principal in the firm's Chicago office, suggests that these paradigm shifts are being driven by the consumer and not government regulation. And consumer demand is the most important factor as to why these shifts will stick. Kate, can it really be the case that organisations wanting to remain competitive and attract more customers will need to focus on sustainability?
We talk a lot about millennials and their search for meaning and their awareness of the planet, awareness of ecology. And I think we've said before, haven't we, Rod, that consumers who are asking these really hard questions of companies and saying, well, if you can't tell me what you're doing about plastics, if you can't tell me what you're doing about your supply chain, I'm going to buy from somebody else, is far stronger, far more powerful than any sort of regulation. And other companies, much smaller companies, I think are able to do this in a way. Startups are able to be ethical from the beginning. Companies like Sundried that not only use recycled plastics, but also coffee grinds in their sportswear ranges. But interestingly, it's more than that. It's more than about plastic. It's about recognizing the whole individual. And they have 10 minutes almost compulsory exercise every hour. So ethics is much more than plastic, but it's much more driven, I think, by consumers who are aware about what they're buying, and talented young people who are asking difficult questions of companies that might employ them.
Thank you, Kate. Our final story looks at a new survey of 2,000 working British adults by the charity supporting Chartered Accountants Wellbeing, the CABA. The survey found that the modern employee is more stressed than ever, with the average working adult stressed for nearly a third of every working day, and 4 in 10 adults feeling they are very close to breaking point. Respondents listed checking work emails at all hours of the day and night, performing a speech or presentation, and overly demanding superiors as their top workplace stressors. And the survey found that nearly half of the respondents who admitted being stressed at work did nothing to fix the issue. They simply hoped the problem would go away. Among respondents who did take action to fix a stressful situation, 38% went to their manager and 51% went for a walk to calm down. Taking a vacation did little to reduce stress for 3 out of 5 respondents who got stressed due to all of the work they would fall behind on while they were away from the office. Kate, what can the Institute do to raise awareness amongst its members of the importance of recognising and dealing appropriately with stress in the workplace?
Well, as you know, we're great champions of the line manager and recognise the complexity, the challenges and the sheer difficulty of managing other people. And so for everybody out there who does have staff that they manage, are we being overly demanding? And do we know that that's what we're being? Because sometimes we might make a request that we feel is quite important, but it's heard by a member of our team as being really important, something that they have to attend to immediately. So we should be very aware of the requests that we're making and very aware of realistic guidelines, because it's so interesting to hear that so many people do nothing about it, or even going for a walk. Now, that might be an immediate stress reliever. It might enable you to go back to your desk and think, oh, things weren't as bad as I thought, but it's not solving the problem of a misalignment of what's a reasonable expectation of the people that we work with. And as we say so often, don't be quiet about this. Only way you're really going to get that alignment is by talking to your manager and saying, I can't deliver this. This is an unreasonable request, or help me prioritise. Or however you frame that conversation, the responsibility, I think, initially, of course, is with the line manager, but nobody's powerless in this. They are able to raise their concerns and get to a new level of understanding about what a priority really is.
Thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod. But let me remind everybody, not only did we win an award for the podcast, but once again, My Leadership, our brilliant e-learning experience, also won an award. So if you aren't a member of the Institute, please go online, have a look at what we have to offer. Lots of our tools are freely available. And thank you once again for listening.